Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and New York Times columnist Joan O'Sara is back with us now to talk about former Fannie and Freddie chiefs accused and how private equity firms like the one Mitt Romney ran, how they often make money even when the companies they own go bust. Hi, Joe. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. Thank you. So Mitt Romney used to run Bain Capital Management, a private equity firm. What does that mean Romney did for a living?
That's a good question. They bought companies. That's what they did. Usually with debt, usually pulling out fees for the quote-unquote improvements that they would impose, some of which were real and some of which... But the whole idea was you find a company that's either publicly traded or is, you know, owned by a single person who's looking to cash out. You buy the company, you make it more efficient, you lay off people, you maybe put in different processes and so on and so forth. You make it more valuable, and then you bring it back to the public markets, and presumably the stock price will, you know, rise, and you'll make a lot of money. But
so
these guys make a lot of money, even if that doesn't necessarily happen.
Aha, uh-huh. And that's the point, isn't it? Even if the businesses that they own make money, fail to make money, then a company like Bain still makes money?
Well, I don't want to say that as a blanket statement, but what often happens in these deals is the private equity firms pull out large fees, which they pay to themselves, as, you know, management fees, improvement fees, setting goals fees, you know, all kinds of fees. And so, you know, those fees go directly to the partners. If it does wind up going public and as does become successful, then everybody makes a lot of money. And, you know, if it winds up going bust, that actually usually happens after it's gone public anyway and the private equity firm has walked away. I mean, I don't mean to sound quite as cynical as that sounds, but, yeah, I guess it is pretty cynical.
Newt Gingrich has been sounding, well, maybe cynical, in saying that Romney was in the business of destroying a lot of jobs, that is, laying people off, putting companies out of business. Here's part of Romney's response in Thursday night's debate.
In the real world, some things don't make it. And I believe I've learned from my successes and my failures. The president I'll look at and say, Mr. President, how'd you do when you were running General Motors as the president? Took it over. Gee, you closed down factories. You closed down dealerships. And he'll say, well, I did that to save the business. Same thing with us, Mr. President. We did our very best to make those businesses succeed. I'm pleased that they did, and I've learned the lessons of how the economy works. This president doesn't know how the economy works. I believe to create jobs, it helps to have created jobs.
Mitt Romney with the pleasant little blink sound you heard in the middle of that, telling him his time was up. Joe Nocera, what were you thinking when you heard that analogy to the president laying off people at General Motors?
Well, I mean, I think on this particular case, the president was Romney and the president were absolutely right. I mean, GM was in terrible trouble because it was a very bloated company with too many dealerships, too many brands, too many white-collar employees at headquarters. Their whole vision was maintaining market share, even if they were selling cars unprofitably. I mean, I think they're right about that. And at their best, a private equity firm can impose that kind of efficiency, which is necessary for capitalism to truly work. I mean, the whole creative destruction of capitalism. But, you know, the problem for Romney and anybody in that industry is that quite often, greed gets in the way of that efficiency, or clouds, you know, causes them to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do, just to put money in their pockets.
What's the difference between a hedge fund, a venture capitalist, and a private equity firm like Bain? Are these all different things?
Yeah, they are. They're actually quite different. A venture capitalist, as we see in Silicon Valley, are firms that fund startup companies. So, you know, Mark Zuckerberg comes into your office and says, I've got this great idea for Facebook, but I need some money. So they give him, you know, $3 million, $4 million, $5 million in return for, say, 20% of the company. And Mark Zuckerberg builds a big company. It's giantly successful. And that $3 million or $4 million becomes, you know, $100 million. A hedge fund is simply an investment firm that trades in stocks, short stocks, goes long stocks, you know, trades in bonds, does all that kind of stuff. They're really not buying companies or involved in management or anything like that. They're just a trading partnership, a private trading partnership. A private equity firm is a firm that buys a going concern and tries to make money by squeezing out inefficiencies and then selling it back to the public market and making a big killing when they do.
I've read that investors in private equity do about 20% better on average than investors in the stock market. Does that sound about right to you?
I think that may be the great private equity firms, the big ones like Blackstone and KKR. They at their best they make a lot more than 20%.
Where does Bain fit in?
Bain is pretty much at the high end. Bain is one of the most respected private equity firms. They're probably just a step below Blackstone and KKR.
Can anyone invest in a private equity firm? Can I go to a broker and say, you know, the stock market's not for me anymore. I want to invest in private equity like Mitt Romney.
Yeah, well, good luck with that, Brian. Private equity firms raise their money from large institutional investors, pension funds, endowment funds, various other forms of pools of large institutional money. They could not be less interested in your money. I'm sorry to tell you, Brian.
So is it heads I win, tails you lose for private equity investors, those who have the money to actually buy a stake, more than for other kinds of investments?
Well, Brian, you know, this is also true of hedge funds and venture funds. I mean, wealthy people and wealthy large institutions get investment opportunities on a regular basis that you and I will never have. There is risk. I mean, some of these companies don't work. I mean, if you're a venture company, you know, you're hoping that you'll find the next Apple computer, but quite often you find the next pets.com. So, I mean, this is the way of the world. One of the ways that markets are unequal is that the small guy doesn't get opportunities like this.
Did Mitt Romney start Staples? He seems to take credit for that all the time.
You know, it's a New England. He may well have. I don't fully know that for sure. Given that he's a private equity firm, there's almost no possibility that he actually started it. But he, you know, Staples may have been owned by a private equity firm at some point in his career. But I'm glad you asked me that because now I'll take a look into it.
All right. John Nocera, New York Times columnist. New topic. For those of you who think no one's being held accountable for the financial crisis, congratulations. Two guys now stand accused by the federal government. Are they from Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, J.P. Morgan Chase? Nope. They're the former CEOs of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, Richard Syron and Daniel Mudd. They stand accused as of Friday by the federal government. Joe Nocera, what are they accused of exactly?
They're accused of not being clear to investors or disguising the size of their subprime portfolios. That's essentially what they're accused of. And that is therefore supposed, you know, and one of the very few weapons the SEC actually has in trying to get the bad guys is disclosure. What have you actually disclosed to investors? I happen to think, Brian, and I'm going to write this in my column tomorrow, that the case against them is extraordinarily weak.
Why?
Well, first of all, there's a judge in New York who's already thrown out the disclosure aspect of a shareholder lawsuit brought against Fannie and Freddie on the grounds that they had plenty of disclosure. That's number one. Number two, you get into there's a lot of stuff that went wrong in the financial crisis, and Fannie and Freddie did their share of stupid things. But the idea behind this lawsuit, which is that Fannie and Freddie are at the heart of what caused the financial crisis, is just not true. It's a Republican meme that has been widely spread in an effort to make it appear that the government is the bad guy here and that private business really had nothing to do with this, when the truth is just the opposite. It was Fannie and Freddie following private industry into subprime rather than leading the way.
Is this political? Is this the Obama SEC with backroom advice from the Obama campaign going after the CEOs of these government-sponsored low-income lenders rather than, say, Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO of Goldman, because of that Republican talking point?
I don't believe that that's the reason why that's it's happening. I do believe that the complaint is largely political, but I don't think it comes from the Obama White House. I think it comes from the fact that the SEC has had its head handed to it so many times in the last 3 years. It's trying to do something, anything, to show the American public that it's, you know, trying to root out financial fraud, which it has done a very, very poor job of.
Is this similar to the civil case, because it is a civil case, not a criminal case, brought against Goldman Sachs, charging them with failure to disclose the risks or their interests to investors in toxic securities funds?
Well, I happen to think the Goldman case was fairly strong, and Goldman did pay $500 million to settle it. I think this case is actually fairly different. I think in the Goldman case, you really did have a bona fide example of genuine deception to those who were investing in these securities, i.e., that Goldman had allowed a hedge fund manager to pick the securities in the portfolio, hoping that they would blow up and cost the investors money. I think that's a little different than, you know, how Fannie and Freddie defined subprime and at the height of the bubble.
Before you go, last time you were on, as we were running out of time, our segment ended like this. Can you do Occupy Wall Street post-camping phase in 10 seconds?
I am so not the right person to ask about Occupy Wall Street.
Okay.
You'll get hate mail for months if you hear what I really say about it.
All right. I am now ready for the hate mail.
Okay. All right. I'll give it to you in one sentence. And I have to say, everybody in my own department thinks I'm crazy for saying this, but this is what I think. When the right gets mad, when the right gets angry, they form a Tea Party, throw out congressmen, and put in people who will willingly shut down the United States government at their behest. When the left gets mad, they take over a park.
Are we seeing, since you were on for that segment?
Okay, how much hate mail is that going to get you?
I don't know. You know, just maybe a few tweets. You know. It's going to get you hundreds of thousands of letters. No. Are we seeing more of a bleed over into policy, though? You know, a lot of people are giving Occupy credit for the Cuomo tax compromise, for example, here in New York.
I think it has done the one thing it's absolutely done is create this slogan about the 99% and the 1%, and it has, without question, raise visibility on income inequality. You know, I think in the Cuomo situation, every once in a while, he has to show that he's actually a liberal. You know, he did it with gay marriage, thankfully, and he's done it with this tax, thankfully. But when you actually look at what he's done as governor, a lot of it is very Chris Christie-like. So I'm not convinced that it was Occupy Wall Street that did it, but certainly the political environment caused it to happen.
All right. Well, maybe they did a little more than take over the park, but we will leave it there.
Maybe next time we can really have a discussion about this before there's 3 minutes left in the segment.
Go ahead. What else do you want to say?
I thought you would argue with me or something. I'm very conflicted about this. Because I am sympathetic to the goals of Occupy Wall Street, but I think it's a leaderless movement that's going to go nowhere. And I find that depressing, especially given how strong out of the box the Tea Party came and how Occupy Wall Street really could learn some lessons about getting involved in government and making a difference from the Tea Party.
What would it take for it to become a movement that goes somewhere?
A real political agenda, a willingness to try and shake things up, not just in the parks of the United States, but in Washington, and a clear set of ideas about what we could do about income inequality and do about the banks and make some how we could make some real changes.
Joe Nocera, New York Times columnist. We'll be looking forward to your piece tomorrow on the Fannie and Freddie charges. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll continue to follow the developments in North Korea following the death of Kim Jong-il. Among other things, we'll talk about the little-known 20-something heir to Kim Jong-il's dear leadership. Stay with us.